And night will come for us all.
Hey, Samantha, where can they find us on the social medias?
I am so glad you asked. They can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Reaper Tales Podcast and on TikTok at reaper.tales.podc.
Not pod,
just podc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can email us at reapergals@reapertales.com. I'm always looking at it. So if you're one of the ones that emails me on a regular basis, you know that. I do respond almost in real time. Unless like
almost.
I'm on vacation or like I'm bed rotting, but that's a different thing. So email us at reapergals, G-A-L-S, at reapertales.com. Email me to tell me that I look pretty. Email me to tell me I'm doing a good job and to send us your show suggestions and anything else that you want us to cover or anything like that. So, yeah.
And please remember to like, rate, review, subscribe, all the things you lovely listeners know what to do anyway on any of the listening platforms that you use. As per usual, you get bonus points if you do it on platforms you don't listen to us on, but you give us a nice little review. And worded reviews will get special shout outs. So if you are so inclined to do so, please do us a favor. Makes it a little easier for people to find us. And if you don't
Thanks.
Want to be listed out, by the way, on the worded reviews, it's too bad. We're still going to give you a shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you say we smell like boogers or something like that. Okay, thanks.
Rude.
Hello, I'm Montana.
And I'm Samantha.
And you're listening to
Reaper Tales.
Today we're going to tell you about two different unsolved-ish. I say ish, and you'll understand why when I get to mine. Unsolved cases. But before we get started, Samantha, what are you drinking?
So I'm not drinking. We obviously didn't do a pairing. We don't do that for these. But I am drinking, it's raspberry lemonade and Sprite Zero.
Oh, fun.
How about you?
I have my tea, my hibiscus tea and Sprite. Yeah.
Lovely.
I guess I'm the only one drinking alcohol. It's been a long day. I have some leftover White Claws. I have some leftover White Claws from this weekend. So I've got two, one here and one there waiting to be drank.
I partook plenty during the 4th of July vacation that we took. So I'm good for a little while anyway.
I actually didn't drink that much just because it was so hot. And I just got overheated most days. So I just was like, I feel kind of icky and sick. So I'm sticking with mostly water and my refreshing tea over here. I did have some wine when I got a pedicure earlier. So
there you go.
You're not alone, Kelsey. Whatever.
Timing just didn't match up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm first, according to Kelsey.
Who keeps up with this stuff?
Yeah, she keeps up with it for us. Otherwise, you know, it would be whoever goes first any of those times.
Loosey goosey.
Loosey goosey. That's the way I live my entire life. Hey.
We do what we can.
So today I'm gonna tell you about the death of Tucker Hips. Kelsey, I know the answer for you for this, but Kelsey, you went to college, obviously. You both went to college. Were you in a sorority?
I was for a short time. I was in Delta Gamma. I ended up dropping because it was expensive. Like, I know people and I made friends and stuff in the sorority, but yeah, it's expensive to be in a sorority and then also to like pay for college. So, but I was in one, yes.
Yeah. Did you do like any hazing or anything like that?
No, it was our school was very strict with hazing. The only thing that I remember that was kind of weird, it wasn't hazing at all, but it was like kind of creepy. When we had our initiation, they didn't tell us anything about it, but they did say you have to wear either white or beige underwear and a bra. Like they said, you have to. That's like what you have to wear. So we all thought that was really weird. But then it turned out that we had to wear white dresses. So it made sense, like when we got there, because they were like, here's your outfit, you know, and they gave us all white dresses, like kind of sheer looking for the initiation. And so they just didn't want us to be embarrassed if we had like a hot pink, you know, pair of underwear on or something. So that was like the only reason. But no, my school was very strict about hazing policies. So at least we didn't, at least the females. I don't know what the fraternities did. I'm sure they didn't do anything terrible because I would have heard about it.
Yeah. Well, they're cracking down on it. I think when I looked at it, it was only most states have laws against hazing and sororities and fraternities nowadays. I think there's like six that don't. And mostly the reason that those six don't, I don't know what the list is. I know, I think Montana's on it because I was like, damn, there she goes again. But I think the reason that they don't have laws against it is because they've never really had an issue with it. So it wasn't like a necessary thing to do.
It hasn't come up, quote unquote,
yeah,
as an issue.
Right. Well, I asked this for a reason, obviously, and we're going to get to it. So let's talk
also,
about
it. By the way, Montana knew my answer because the answer is no.
Yeah. I was like, there's no way in hell Samantha was going to listen to somebody tell her what to do and how to do anything. And, you know, fuck building
like,
a community.
I'm sorry. Do you need a new president? Oh, sure. I can do that.
Yeah. I tell people what to do. I don't take orders. Thanks. Okay. Bye. Tucker William Hibbs was born on June 5th, 1995 in Greenville, South Carolina, to parents Gary and Cindy Hibbs. Tucker was a member of Rock Springs Baptist Church. He accepted Christ at the early age of 10 and was also very active in the youth and church boards. He was involved in the Palmetto Boys State, where he was a senior counselor. And the Palmetto Boys State was actually, it's an interesting concept. It's where the youths can create their own type of like working government and things like that. And they get to meet with actual senators and things like that. And they get familiar with how governments run and they get introduced and they get to network with those people. And it's like a big deal to be able to do it because you have to have good references to be able to do it. So this is kind of that's a pretty nifty thing.
It sounds like it's very much setting you up for the future if that's the direction you decide to go into.
Yeah. Tucker was a 2013 graduate of Wren High School, where he participated in school sports and other activities. He played like three sports. It was ridiculous. He was a sophomore at Clemson University and participated in intramural sports there. So he wasn't like collegiate sports, but he was still active there. Tucker, an only child, was said to be a mama's boy on one day and a daddy's boy the next. Tucker had a passion for helping others who were less fortunate and would give his own money to those in need. He was a senior counselor of Palmetto Boys State, where a scholarship has been established in his name. From all accounts, Tucker loved everyone, and everyone reported he was their best friend. Tucker made funny faces, captured by many who continue to share his photos. He loved taking pictures of his girlfriend, Katie, and his parents feel fortunate to have so many to look back on. And from like all accounts, he was like a really well-adjusted kid. Instead of wanting to buy like material things, he was one of those people who would prefer to spend his money on like experiences, like going and doing things that he can remember. And a lot of people said, you know, even if he only had a couple of bucks, he would use it to give somebody who was hungry food. He was just a really kind-hearted and caring person. Being from South Carolina, it came as no surprise that Tucker decided to attend Clemson University. With his friendly nature and strong athletic and educational achievements, it would also come as no surprise that Tucker decided to pledge a fraternity, Sigma Phi Epsilon, in September 2014.
Kind of going to argue with you because I'm a little surprised. Just, I mean, the sport's okay, but the rest of it makes me kind of surprised that he wanted to do that, to be honest. Just knowing what goes on in there.
It's interesting that you say that because his parents also had some like reservations about him joining this fraternity. But during orientation, when his parents attended it, they were kind of sold on the idea. And, you know, it wasn't just like Tucker decided to do this. He consulted with his parents before he did it. So it was kind of like a group discussion and they lightened up to it because in that orientation, they were told that, you know, on average, people who join sororities and fraternities end up with higher GPAs, better grades, better time management skills. And then they also get to network within that group and create contacts that can further their careers in the future. So, him wanting to get into after Clemson, he wanted to go to law school. He was in political science. He wanted to go into law school. And he hoped that by joining this fraternity, he would get, you know, contacts so that he could do an internship towards his career path. So it kind of made sense that he wanted to do it. And he also wanted a community of like brothers that he could kind of fall back on because he was no longer at home. So that was his mindset kind of going into it. Like, I get what you're saying, but you can kind of be sold on the idea, especially if it's your first time away from home.
Yeah, I know. That part does make sense. It's just the overwhelming stories that you hear of what actually happens in these places. It does strike me as surprising. And the cynical part of me is like, oh yeah, they have higher GPAs, better time management skills. How much of that is because they get away with some stuff a little bit too much sometimes, depending on who they know? But because of who they know and who you have there, that is a good place to network because they're going to be able to get you places because a lot of those people in those fraternities, like their parents did, were in the fraternity forever ago and their parents, and it's like a legacy type thing. So that makes sense. It's just, I was raised in a very similar background, so I would have never even thought to join a sorority, just knowing the kind of trouble that follows, that tends to follow.
Same. And by all accounts, like Tucker's family, they're not wealthy, but if you're going to go to Clemson, if you don't go with a scholarship or any type of assistance, you're from a wealthy family. Clemson is a top tier school. It costs a lot of money to go to it. And to be in a fraternity, it's going to cost even more. So keep that in mind as we continue with this story, because everybody that's in this fraternity, majority of them are going to be affluent. They come from an affluent family.
And I actually didn't know that it costs a lot of money to be in those things. So that would have eliminated me too, because I've never had money. But
I will say too that when I joined, a lot of people that were in the sorority with me, they joined because they wanted to get leadership opportunities. And having that leadership opportunity like on a resume later can, I guess, sometimes help you. So that was like one reason, you know, I guess I wanted to do it, and other people around me did it as well.
Yeah. And yeah, that all of that makes sense. But again, you know, you're young, you don't really know what's what. And this was also 2014 when he joined. So, you know, today and age, that was still back when, like, some of those, like, college movies of, like, fraternities where it's just parties and having a good time were, like, the crux of what you think about with the joke of fraternities. But then you're fed at the college level of, no, this is a great like networking opportunity, blah, 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 all that other stuff. So, you know, which is it?
They don't have to be mutually exclusive. That's the thing. I mean, it can be a brotherhood, but then also have a lot of partygoers that have maybe had it pretty easy in life and don't take college maybe as seriously as they should.
Truly.
It can be both.
So, on the morning of Tucker's death, members of the fraternity went on a pre-dawn early morning run. There were 25 plus members of the fraternity on the run that morning. While on the run, they went over Lake Hartwell Bridge. Some would later say that on the bridge, they noticed that Tucker lagged behind, but assumed that he would catch up, like he was tying a shoe or he needed a breather or whatever. So everybody continued on. The run occurred sometime around 5:30 a.m., which, bless their hearts as college kids, because ain't no way at that age my ass was seeing 5:30 a.m. And no one knew that anything was amiss until Tucker didn't show up for the fraternity breakfast at 7 a.m. So they started their run at 5:30 a.m., they finished at 7, and they get back, and Tucker's not at the house. So they decided to look all over the house, and then they finally decide to retrace their steps. So they go and they retrace their steps. They don't see Tucker anywhere. And remember, they got back at the house at 7 a.m., had breakfast, couldn't find him, his phone, his keys, everything were still at the house. They retrace their steps and they get back. Finally, around 1:45 p.m., Campbell Starr, a member of the fraternity, called campus police asking for information concerning Tucker.
That seems like a really long delay, considering he was literally on the run with them and obviously didn't return with them, and he's nowhere to be found.
Well, my thing, too, is like, so they went at 5:30. They got back at 7. Okay, that's an hour and a half. Let's say they search the house for an hour. That's 8. If they retrace their steps, we'll give them 2 hours, just in case they're going slowly. Hell, 2.5 hours. 8. 9, 10, 10:30.
What were they doing between that
time?
That's
a good question. That's a good question. So, I have the 911 call for you guys.
Police and fire.
Hi, I'm calling to see if this morning or some point today y'all picked up a 19-year-old guy, like brown hair. He's like my buddy. I'm looking for him.
We haven't arrested anybody today.
No, not like an arrest. Just like picked him up.
What do you mean picked up?
I don't know, like just like off the side of the road or something.
No, we don't just pick up people off the side of the road. The only thing we do is if we have an arrest. Or if we have to send medics out to somebody.
Okay.
Where was the last place you were seeing your buddy?
We went for a run this morning.
Was he sick or depressed?
No,
or anything?
See, I don't know. We didn't think he was or anything. We don't want to file a report yet. I was just calling to see if y'all could help us out a little bit.
Have you called Clemson City to see if he has been arrested or picked up there or?
No, see, he wouldn't be arrested for anything. That's not even a question.
Have you called Clemson City to see if they medics picked up anybody?
The weird thing is that we have he left his phone in my place and his truck keys and everything. Like, we have everything just like we have no idea where he is.
Was he depressed?
No, not at all.
Nothing like that.
No, we said because it was a group of us and we thought everybody made it back and we realized it was, like. We realize that we have all this stuff.
Okay, what is his name? That way, in case we get a medic call or anything.
I don't really want to do a report yet.
No, I'm not saying a report. I'm saying if I have to dispatch out medics because he was sick somewhere, I can know that we need to contact you. Because
okay, well, his name's Tucker Hips.
Tucker?
Hips.
Hit?
Hips, like H-I-P-P-S.
H-I-T-T-S?
P-P, like...
Hips. Do you want to leave your name and number or anything in case we...
Yeah, you can leave my name and number.
Okay, what's your name and number?
My name's Campbell Starr.
Quick question. Samantha, what did you find odd about that?
The fact that he kept saying, did you find somebody on the side of the road? Multiple times. And she was like, well, we didn't arrest anybody. He's like, oh, no. No question about an arrest. But did you find somebody on the side of the road? Like, that's just a really weird thing to ask.
Yeah. Did you pick somebody up? And then he was pretty adamant about not, I don't know if that was in the portion that you heard, but he was pretty adamant about not filing. You probably didn't, because before she transfers him, she asked for his information. But he was pretty adamant about not filing a missing persons report, which was very bizarre to me, because obviously he's missing. Now, here's the thing. There's a couple of things that you're going to need to know going forward. Number one is that the run that the guys were on had been banned. The school had told them that they weren't allowed to run this route early in the morning, yada, yada, yada. But the fraternity had called the school to get permission to do this that morning, but they didn't get an answer in return.
So they called to ask for permission, but instead of waiting to see if they actually got it, they just would rather ask for forgiveness.
Yes. And not only that, the boys not only knew that they were doing something wrong, you know, you can say, oh, we called the school, you know, to say that we were going to do it. But they absolutely knew that they were doing something wrong, because all of them were instructed to wear black clothing to go on this run so that they wouldn't be seen, which is really dangerous. If you are running at night, you need reflective gear. So, yeah. Another thing that you should know is the same day that this occurred, they were about to suspend all fraternity and sorority activities because of incidents that had already occurred on Clemson that semester. So the same day.
What time of year was this? I'm sorry, I don't know if I missed it.
September. Now, after this call, around 2:15 p.m., so they called at 1:45, 2:15 p.m., police officers began searching near the bridge that Campbell Starr told the dispatcher about. Because you can't just call something like that in, you know, whatever. And around 3:30 p.m., an officer spotted a body in the water. It turned out to be Tucker. Authorities launched a death investigation immediately. And around 5:15 p.m., rescue divers recovered Tucker's body from the shallow water around the bridge. It was less than 10 feet from the shoreline. So they started searching, launched an investigation, and recovered a body in half the time it took these guys to call authorities. Odd.
After retracing their steps.
Yeah. At 6:30 p.m., and also the reason they needed divers to get the body, even though he was in like a shallow area, was because it was slick. They couldn't just like go down and retrieve it. And he was kind of like wedged in there. At 6:30 p.m., investigators left the area of the bridge and lake. At 7:50 p.m., the sheriff's office announced that they recovered a body from the lake. And at 8:40 p.m., the coroner identified the body as Tucker officially. So, investigators immediately went and talked to the fraternity, everyone there. And they were pretty cooperative in the beginning. You know, they told the basic same story that Campbell Starr said, told the dispatcher. You know, they all met. They went for a run, leaving their keys and phone at the frat house. Once they got back home and noticed Tucker wasn't around for breakfast, they began to search for him. They didn't find him and eventually contacted the police. An autopsy showed that Tucker died of head injuries consistent with having hit rocks in the shallow waters near the edge of the bridge. And that's all investigators had.
So that's the official cause of death, not drowning.
Right.
So he was dead before he got in the water.
No, not necessarily. He hit his head on rocks at the bottom of the bridge. So where it's at is shallow. There's rocks, there's mud, and there's water.
Okay.
So he died of a head injury. And after that, police tried to go and talk with the members of the fraternity again, and they all lawyered up.
Did he have other injuries outside of that?
Mm-mm. No.
Okay.
Did he have water in his lungs?
No.
Okay.
He died of a head injury. So that was all police had to go on. They interviewed more than like 50 people about what happened to Tucker the day he disappeared, but no one would talk. There were rumors that were swirling around campus. Many of the rumors involved Tucker's frat brothers, especially Sam Carney, whose dad also happens to be the current governor of Delaware. Many of the rumors mentioned cover-ups by the fraternity and Clemson University to protect the members of the frat because of who their parents are, allegedly. So there's a couple of other things I have to go over. The morning that they went on this run, Tucker honestly shouldn't have been out running because he should have been exhausted. Many of the leaders in this fraternity called him constantly all night long, so he didn't get a lot of sleep. And that's like a hazing thing, you know, make sure that they don't sleep, keep them on edge, do this whole thing, even though they don't do hazing, whatever you say. Another thing that happened that morning, Tucker was asked by a brother in a text message he was told to get McDonald's breakfast for after the run. It was supposed to be 30 McDonald's biscuits, 30 hash browns, and 2 gallons of, what do you think they would drink after a run?
Orange juice.
Chocolate milk.
Okay.
Yeah. Tucker told this brother, he texted back and he was like, hey, I don't have the money for that. Brother, me either. And I'm 34. Like, I did loose math. I looked at like charts that basically say that McDonald's has doubled in their prices since 2014. So I added up all of what that would be today and divided it in half, and it's almost $200. Like, that's a lot for a kid. That's a lot for a kid.
That's a lot of McDonald's.
Yeah, it's a lot of McDonald's. Also, I don't eat McDonald's. I haven't eaten it in like a year, so whatever. Probably never will again. So Tucker tells him, hey, my guy, I don't have the money for that. And this brother tells him, well, collect it from the other pledges. You know, y'all just pull your money and get it. Well, the next morning, Tucker shows up and he doesn't have it, because what college kid has 20 bucks to put into a pool to get McDonald's? Like, eat your ramen noodles, my guy.
The ones that are asking for it would have
right.
The money.
Yeah. So when Tucker showed up and he didn't have the breakfast, and this is all according to a lawsuit filed by Tucker's parents, a brother named Brian Gulnick ended up very angry. He was very angry. He was not going to get his 2 gallons of chocolate milk after running. Ew. He then called another brother, Thomas King, and angrily told him that Tucker and the other pledges didn't bring breakfast. And this is all alleged according to a lawsuit. While on the run, they alleged that King asked Tucker to stay back with him on the bridge and confronted him. Next thing they know, Tucker has gone over the rail. King called Campbell Starr and Sam Carney to come help look for Tucker, but shining the flashlight from his cell phone over the railing of the bridge. And this is according to an eyewitness. There were two witnesses, so that was the first witness. The second witness, who was off the record, the witness said that when they were on the bridge, they forced Tucker to get on one of the rails along the bridge and walk across. It was a known hazing that the fraternity had forced pledges to do in the past. The witness said that at one point, Tucker was walking along the rail and slipped. He caught himself and tried to pull himself up. So they said that he caught himself like under his armpits. but he couldn't, like, the way he was hanging, he couldn't, like, get himself up. He tried to pull up, but lost grip and fell into the shallow water head first. Another account claims that Tucker was pushed from the rail, but again, this was never, that's never been confirmed or on record. There was also another account by, I'm not even going to name this guy, because it's not, it is what it is. It was an elderly man. He was in his 70s, and he claims that he saw what happened that morning. And he told police that the guys were just having a good time, blah, 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 all this other stuff. But when he was subpoenaed to come in and file his testimony, he didn't show up. And he told the court that the reason he didn't show up was because he didn't feel well or something like that. And so they actually had to go and, like, drag him in. And his story kind of changed, and that's why I didn't really want to mention it, but I do kind of want to mention it. He then says that, oh, they were having a good time, you know, whatever. They were obeying everything, and, you know, they were wearing... The one thing that kind of got me in the statement was he stated that they were wearing bright orange colors, which was not true. They were all wearing black. So it just kind of, like, negates everything that he said. He was basically saying that nothing bad happened. So, sounds weird to me. The other thing weird that happened was between the time that Tucker went missing and before the fraternity called the police, his girlfriend, Katie, ended up getting kind of worried because she had not heard from him. And one of the brothers ended up texting Katie and saying, hey, probably can't get a hold of Tucker right now because he's at the library. And then he texted his other brothers and said, hey, you know, basically, I helped buy us some time by waylaying Katie. You tell me if they knew they did something wrong here. Like,
it kind of sounds a little bit, it kind of sounds a little bit like a bunch of college boys that didn't really know what they were doing and were trying to cover it up.
Yeah.
Whatever it was that they did that they know was wrong.
Yeah. Another story claims that when King asked Tucker to stay back and talk with him, others were there as well. As punishment for not bringing breakfast, they dangled him over the rails by his ankles or legs and lost their grip, dropping Tucker into the water below. Whatever happened, it's pretty clear there's more to it than anyone is, like, willing to say. My thing is, it could have been a hazing thing. You know, if this was a known thing and they were like, hey, you've got to get up on this railing and you've got to walk it, like, this dangerous thing, it could have been a hazing thing and he could have just fallen. It could have been. But it was all of the actions afterwards that are, like, not okay. Like, you know, you did something wrong.
And this isn't just, I'm going to get grounded. This isn't just, I'm going to have to pay a fine. This is somebody's life on the line. Yeah. This costs somebody's life. So there is no justification here for not just simply telling the truth about what happened.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, like, I don't know what happened. It's bizarre to me that they went to the lengths that they did to try and buy time and hide things that they did if they didn't do anything actively wrong, you know? I'm not, like I said, I'm not sure what happened, but it's obvious to me that if the allegations that have been brought forward are true, somebody did something wrong here, whether it be hazing, gone wrong, whether it be actively pushing somebody off a bridge, actively dangling somebody off a bridge. Somebody did something wrong. Doesn't matter at what level it is at this point. You killed somebody. Your actions led to somebody's death. Tucker's death sparked a significant amount of attention and controversy surrounding hazing and fraternity activities at Clemson University. Many students and members of the community were shocked and saddened by Tucker's death and called for changes to be made to prevent similar incidents from occurring in the future. In response to the incident, Clemson University implemented a number of changes to its policies related to Greek organizations, including stricter regulations for hazing and alcohol use, as well as increased oversight of fraternity and sorority activities. Tucker's parents, Gary and Cindy, filed a wrongful death suit against the university, the fraternity, and several individuals involved in the incident. The lawsuit claimed that the fraternity and university were liable for Tucker's death due to their failure to properly supervise and regulate the activities of the fraternity. In 2019, a jury rejects all of the claims and found no fault to any of the defendants. Before Tucker's death, pre-dawn runs have been banned on campus, like I said. And like I said, they ended up wearing black clothing. In the year since Tucker's death, Sigma Phi Epsilon closed its chapter at Clemson University. There are chapters all over for that, but they weren't permanently closed. They were permanently closed, but they weren't. They were able to, when it came up in 2019, they were able to request to reopen. As far as I know, they haven't. So it was like a temporary thing. Hey, you're closed for whatever. Sam Carney, son of Delaware Governor John Carney, was supposedly the mastermind of the pre-dawn run and organized everything. Governor Carney and his wife expressed their condolences to Gary and Cindy, but that's all. After his death, Gary and Cindy worked tirelessly to try and pass legislation against hazing. The Tucker-Hibbs Transparency Act states that all public institutions of higher education, excluding technical colleges, must provide a public report of actual findings of violations of institutions' conduct of student organizations by fraternities and sorority organizations formerly, currently affiliated with the institute. The report includes conduct violations regarding the following: alcohol, drugs, sexual assault, physical assault, and hazing. Reports are required to be listed in a prominent location on institutional websites for a period of 4 years. The institutions are required to update their reports at least 45 calendar days before the start of the fall and spring academic semesters. Institutions must also notify the South Carolina Commission on Higher Education within 14 calendar days after reports have been updated. They also established the Tucker W. Hibbs Memorial Foundation in his honor. Their mission statement states, in part, with a mission of helping people help others. The Tucker W. Hibbs Memorial Foundation plans to engage with other community organizations to help the needy and less fortunate by seeking to improve their lives. Tucker knew how blessed he was, and he had a passion to help those who were not as blessed. Tucker was not afraid to share his love and joy with anyone, no matter who they were or where they lived. Tucker was a shining light of hope and encouragement to his family and friends, and that hope continues as the foundation strives to minister to those impacted by his life. They held a charity golf tournament every year. The next will be... Oh, it already passed. Boop. They haven't announced the next one, but it was March 2023. They will hold, that was their second annual fishing tournament. Cindy told a story of when Tucker was younger. He told her that he was going to be a basketball star when he grew up. He told his mom that one day he was going to make her rich and famous. She said, quote, "I don't know about the rich part, and I don't really know about the famous part, but he sure left an impression on this world." So while Tucker's parents have done a lot to, you know, make changes, pass laws and things like that when it comes to hazing and having like a safe environment in colleges and fraternities and sororities and things like that, they are still looking for answers to what actually happened to Tucker that day. And so if anybody does have any, you know, information on this, you can call the Osage County Sheriff's Office Criminal Investigation Bureau at 864-718-1052 and speak with investigator Jimmy Dixon. Anonymous tips can be given to Osage, O-C-O, NEESC, crimestoppers.com, or by calling 1-888-CRIME-SC. There is a reward of $100,000 for any information leading to closure in the case. So that's the death of Tucker Gibbs. What are your thoughts?
I think it's pretty obvious that something happened with these young men and they don't want to admit it. Whatever it was, regardless of what it was, they know what happened and they don't want to admit it. And they are using the classic deny, deny, deny and banding together rather than giving the family peace that they could easily give them if they just would tell the truth. And they're going to have to live with that. And
yeah,
hopefully it gets to them at some point and they tell the truth. But unfortunately, in these situations, it doesn't happen often.
Yeah. Well, and here's another problem is that, you know, some of these guys are, well, all of these guys are grown adults now in careers, and some of them have kids of their own now, you know, and the, you know, you hope, and the hope here is that they look at their kids and they say, you know, if this had been my kid, I would want to know. The problem that they face, though, is that if they did know anything and they impeded an investigation, they're going to have to do some time for that. You know, so they'd feel better about themselves, but they're going to lose time with their family. So it's kind of a catch-22 in this situation.
Well, I mean,
if they know anything,
we're all free to act and say things, but we are not free from the consequences of those actions and words. So I'm a firm believer in karma. I've seen it come around for people way too many times. Mm-hmm. I would be scared for that karma bus to come for me.
Yeah.
Because that's heavy.
The reality of it is these are kids who come from affluent backgrounds. They have the resources to kind of stay out of this. And that's the reality that we live in today. I mean, you don't typically... The only reason why his parents filed that $20 million lawsuit, wrongful death lawsuit, was not to get the money.
It's never to get the money.
You can't put a price tag on somebody's life. They wanted to find out more information. And when lawsuits come about like that, when they can't get a criminal case against them, there's evidence that comes up that can then be used for a criminal case. But since it was rejected, they couldn't get that information. So again, you know, if you have information, call that hotline. Samantha, it's your turn.
This is one of those times where we're kind of weirdly in sync in ways. So,
oh, good.
Mine is definitely an unsolved, but it has a lot of very suspicious aspects to it, and it'll be interesting to hear your thoughts on it. And whereas your victim was quite young, mine is on the other side of that equation. So she was in her 70s.
I hate elderly cases.
This one, okay, so I'm just going to get into it. And this is the unsolved murder of Kate Ragsdale. This is actually a pretty well-known case from what I could see, which is odd, and you'll understand when I get more into it. Kate Webb Ragsdale was born January 28, 1940, in Durham, North Carolina, to James and Margaret Webb. According to her obituary on dignitymemorial.com, she grew up in Hillsboro and Greensboro, North Carolina, and graduated as valedictorian of her class from St. Mary's School in Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm not encroaching on your territory. She was in Alabama when this happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Just clarifying. It's weird how often that crosses, though, how often people in Alabama are from North Carolina or spend time in North Carolina when we cover these cases. It comes up a lot.
I went reverse, so I'm safe.
Sure. Maybe. On June 10th, 1961, she married Hugh A. Ragsdale in Guilford, County, North Carolina. I couldn't find much information on their marriage, but Hugh worked at the University of Alabama as the professor of history specializing in Russian history before moving to Virginia. I'm not sure if they were separated or divorced when she was murdered, as her obituary only mentions two sons as her surviving family, Hugh A. Ragsdale III and James Webb Ragsdale.
Wait, so he taught Russian at Alabama University and then he moved to Virginia of all places?
Yeah, so he was in North Carolina. That's where they met and married. They moved to Alabama and he worked at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa for Russian history and then moved at some point to Virginia where he passed.
Well, Jenny, I got to let you know, Virginia is actually above Florida in my would never live in again state. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Who'd have thought? So she later went on to, so going back to, she got married. After she got married, it was really hard to find a timeline. So this was after she graduated high school, obviously. I don't know for sure when she earned her bachelor's, but she earned a bachelor's of arts in religion from Sweetbriar College and then earned her MLS from the School of Library and Information Studies at the University of Alabama. And MLS stands for Master's in Library Science.
Those are so cool. I wanted to be a librarian.
Now, I had no idea this was a degree. And I'd never heard of it. And I wanted more information about the degree and why you would pursue this. So for those that were like me and had no idea, basically, it teaches you the management of books and information, particularly the collection, preservation, and organization of books for libraries. And it's actually a requirement if you're going to work as a professional librarian in like a college a lot of times, or if you're going into, say, like a huge museum like the Smithsonian or something of that level. So you kind of have to have this. It's actually a requirement, which surprised me because, again, I've never even heard of this degree.
Yeah, librarians have to have so much knowledge. It is incredible. I actually used to, one of my free periods in high school, I helped out in the library for years. So that was one thing we did was clean the books, repair the books, and I learned all of how to store them and where to put them. It was so much fun. I loved it so much. I'm a nerd. Would give up my job.
Look behind right you. Now. Like, you are a librarian.
I am a librarian.
You have so many books. Those who can't do teach, well, those who can't be a librarian just have a massive collection of books.
True. Truly.
I actually included a lot of information about that, but I won't get into that because that's going to be a little bit too nerdy maybe. But there are actually only two institutions that are considered. It says there are two institutions to consider for library science degrees in the state of Alabama. One of the largest schools in the state, which is the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa, has an exclusive accredited program by the American Library Association, ALA. The alternative option is gaining a specialist degree in library media through the University of West Alabama, and that's recognized by the Council for the Accreditation of Educator Preparation, CAEP. So this is actually a pretty unique degree, too, and not just you can't just get it anywhere, essentially. And just information-wise, because I was wondering, like, how much money do you make? Because you have to have a master's to have these jobs, and I know you're not going to make that much money, considering. So I kind of rank it up there with teachers. Very important job, vastly important job, not paid nearly enough. There was a list of some recent job postings that require this degree on librarysciencedegrees.com, just to give you an idea. One of them was user experience librarian for the Auburn University Libraries, a salary of $56,410,000 was posted with an ad.
laughable.
Data service librarian for the University of Alabama with a posted salary range of $55,000 to $75,000 per year.
Not enough.
Web development librarian for the University of Alabama, again, $55,000 to $70,000 per year. Head of Access Services and Library Technology, analyst librarian for the Drake Memorial Learning Resource Center, didn't post a salary. So I would say it's probably, from what I can tell, you're looking at between $50,000 and maybe $75,000 for like a lot of experience, a very high degree at a big university. Top would be $75,000 maybe per year.
Which is insane.
And most people don't ever earn the top. They put that range in there and they plan on paying you as close to the lower end as they can because that's just how it works.
Yeah.
And also Alabama is, I will say Alabama pay is going to be lower than other areas of the United States just because cost of living is lower here. So typically the pay is lower, but you get the idea.
Yeah. Well, it's also insane to me because all of the stuff that you listed isn't just the only thing that they know, because like even just like my local library, I visit it a decent amount of times, but I can go in and I can ask them anything. Hey, I'm looking for something on this. And they know exactly where it's at. They know what topic it is. They'll even give me like other recommendations. If you're looking into that, you might want to look into this. Here's some other books. Like they have so much knowledge. I'm like, if only I could store that amount. I can't do it.
You have to have a specific skill set, I would say. For sure.
Not ADHD. That's for sure.
No, that's definitely not going to help. That's chaotic energy for a library. I don't feel like that fits. But maybe it will calm you down. Who knows? Maybe the smell of books is what you really need. That brings that dopamine.
Maybe.
By the 1980s, Kate had started working for the University of Alabama at the Human Resources Institute in the College of Commerce and Business Administration. After she earned her MLS, she was hired as the university library's planning officer and attained the title of associate professor. In 2004, she was awarded the Library Leadership Award for faculty, and in 2012, she also received the Distinguished Alumni Award from her alma mater, the University of Alabama School of Library and Information Sciences, or Information Studies, sorry. She was also involved in several campus-wide committees, as well as civic organizations. She was a member of the Friends of the Library Board, the Junior League, and the Colonial Dames. And she also served on the board of West Alabama AIDS Outreach. And she was very well known for the last one.
Damn, she was doing the damn thing.
I don't think she had any spare time. It doesn't seem like it anyway. From her obituary, dignitymemorial.com, quote, Kate was known for her devotion and loyalty to her family and friends and for her sense of humor and enthusiastic approach to life. Among her many interests were music, dance, sports, travel, and gardening. She was an avid fan of University of Alabama football, as they all are, basketball, gymnastics, baseball, and softball. And she was also known for her great fondness for animals, end quote. And on the website, it actually recommended that her family asked to any funds to be given to her in lieu of flowers to donate to the Humane Society in her memory specifically, or just any other charity that was important to them personally.
Aw.
And that's a lady after my own heart, because that's what I would want to, honestly. Or, you know, if you're not going to donate money, donate food. You don't have to adopt an animal. I wouldn't put that on you. Just give them some food. They always need food.
I'm going to donate money to buy a star that's about to explode. And then I'm going to name it Samantha.
Awesome. Taking something with me. How are they going to know it's about to explode?
I don't know. They know things like that. They're science people.
Science people. Talk to us. In an event that shocked an entire community, Kate's body was found in her home on University Boulevard in the Highlands neighborhood of Tuscaloosa around 5 p.m. on Sunday, February 24th, 2013. She had just turned 73 years old the previous month. According to investigators, Kate's death was ruled a homicide and the cause of death was listed as sharp force trauma, and that she had been killed a couple of days before she was found. And that was basically because it had been like the information that they kind of gathered around the house. It had been 2 to 3 days since anybody had heard from her, which was unusual. And like the mail and paper that had been piled up in her yard because she hadn't left her home. That's basically where they came to that conclusion. So her date of death is actually listed as February 22nd, I think, but it might have been the 21st.
Okay.
Interestingly, the investigators also specified that it didn't seem to be a robbery attempt gone wrong, but that instead it seemed as though the murderer or murderers were looking for something specific. They also believed that the perpetrator or perpetrators were local and knew Kate, coming to her house for a specific reason, knowing it was her house.
What does she have, like, secret library texts? What?
This is a weird case, and I was a little worried the further I dug into stuff. So anyway, by May 29th, 2013, a reward was offered for any information leading to the arrest and conviction of her murderer of $15,000, and that money had been raised by the Highlands Neighborhood Association. Investigators were able to draw a very detailed timeline of Kate's last weeks and days leading up to the murder. And 2 years after her death, they were able to take advantage of the ever-evolving and developing forensic technology and resubmit some of the evidence that they had gathered for analysis. Unfortunately, while they were hopeful that that would bring about some kind of suspect or maybe even the murderer himself, there was no development in the case.
This was 2013, right?
Early 2013.
Yeah. So she would have had like a computer or cell phone or something.
Should have, yeah. Now at her age, I don't know how much she would have used it or what kind she might have had.
She might have had like a Cricket or something. One of those.
Or she may have just kept it at work and only used it at work.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, okay.
Of course, she may have been retired by then because she was 73 by the time she passed. But she was very active in the community, so...
Yeah.
By November 2018, the Tuscaloosa Violent Crimes Unit Captain Gary Hood announced a reward of $20,000 had been posted for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the murderer, in addition to the $5,000 reward the governor had put in place. And according to AL.com, quote, investigators have also discussed this case with Charles Dorsey, a retired FBI agent and former criminal profiler. According to Dorsey's initial analysis of the crime, it is, quote, likely that the offender was young in age and lived in close proximity to the Ragsdale residence, end quote, and probable that the offender walked to and from the scene. And then there was another article on WVTM13.com from 2023, and that's the most recent that I could find. Quote, Stephanie Taylor is public information officer for Tuscaloosa Police Department, but was a reporter for Tuscaloosa News for nearly 2 decades and covered the case as it unfolded. Quote, I started getting a lot of phone calls about a lot of police cars over at the Highlands, which was odd because nothing ever happens there, Taylor points out, and nothing has happened there since. Neighbors gathered prior to February 24th to watch an episode of Downton Abbey. They all went home afterward, and no one could have guessed what was coming next. They let me go into their offices a few times when they were investigating it, and they had turned that small conference room into a war room almost, Taylor says, of the law enforcement investigation. Like every wall was covered with maps where her house was ground zero in the middle, and they had drawn lines around it. They went to everybody's house in the neighborhood and within, I'd say, 5 miles or so, multiple times. Taylor calls it the most exhaustive investigation she can remember. Authorities say neighbors found Ragsdale in her home after she hadn't been seen for several days. Officers haven't said exactly how the 73-year-old was killed, only that it involved a sharp object. Quote, no one goes to put the garbage cart out by themselves at night, they added. No one goes walking the dogs alone, and it's been 10 years. Usually when someone is killed or hurt or a victim of violence, we know the reason, Taylor explains. We know why. They got into an argument with someone. They were in an abusive relationship. They were somewhere they shouldn't have been. But she was walking into her house after being at a friend's house watching Downton Abbey. And that's, I think, one of the things that's really frightened a lot of people is that that could happen to any one of them in any of these situations. So that is all I have for it. Anyone with information is asked to call Crime Stoppers at 205-752-STOP or 205-752-7867. As always, you can call them and be anonymous. There is still a reward for $20,000 and $5,000. But that's literally all I could find. And that in and of itself to me is very odd. There's so little information about this case for somebody who is well known in the community, in a very safe community. There's very little about her family. And her family don't post anything about it. They don't ask for help. They don't have any kind of websites trying to find who did this or what happened. In fact, one of her sons is a very successful, it looked like he was in marketing, and lives basically in another country. United States of something.
The United Arab Emirates.
Thank you. That's it. So he lives there. The other one lives locally. And his son, who is now the fourth, he would be the fourth, is also very educated and involved in politics because her husband's father was in the served in the United States House of Representatives at some point for North Carolina. So that side of the family seems to be connected in politics and maybe powerful places and people, but they're just so quiet, and it just strikes me as very odd.
Well,
in my opinion.
Flip the other coin on that. 2013, while we were, pretty active on Facebook and things like that, Twitter, was really kicking off and things like that. Her children at the time, so she was 73. They had to have been in their 50s. They weren't the type of people, like, if they were in their 50s now, they would have a Facebook, they would have a presence on social media. But back then, it was a young person's game. But as apps and social media evolved, younger generations migrated to the newest and bestest thing. Twitter, I refuse to call it X.
Same.
Instagram, now TikTok. So, and Threads, we have all these other ones that we migrate to because older generations end up on these older social medias, and we're like, eh, get out of here, oldie.
Some people are that way.
So, just playing kind of devil's advocate here, not devil's advocate. If they were in their 50s, I could believe that they wouldn't be active. And at this point, they probably think that it was just somebody who broke in, blah, 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 whatever. My biggest thing is that, did they talk to the husband or the ex-husband, whatever he may be? And what did he say? And the other thing, too, is they're not specifying what the sharp object is. So in my head, that tells me it's not a knife. So it was something very specific that they know what it is. And so they're leaving that out for a reason.
The only thing it would say is they wouldn't release any additional information because that would be too relevant to the case if they were to find somebody, which I get. But there's so little information that is provided outside of basically the timeline and a general cause of death. It's just very odd to me. And he was her husband, ex-husband, separated husband, whatever, was well known in the community as well. And I don't know if he was still living in Alabama at that time. I couldn't tell because, again, there is no timeline. It never shows that they were divorced or separated anywhere or that he got remarried. So I really don't know. But he was well known for his job and his profession at the University of Alabama. So, again, I'm surprised he didn't come forward. There's no interviews with him. There's no quotes from him, like nothing. It just seems very odd to me, or from her kids, like in any of the news articles.
It is odd.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong. I'm just saying it's very strange. This is the first case I've ever come across like that.
The way they're handling it leads me to believe that they think it's somebody young. And the only reason I say that is because after a certain amount of time, police will typically release a little bit more information on what happened. just so that they can garner public interest and things like that. My thought here is that they are somebody very young, is that they're afraid if they release anything, they're going to have somebody who is not the person that did this, who is not well, come in and say, oh, it was me, you know? But then they've lost all of their information to be able to say, okay, well, it specifically blah, blah, blah. And it also says that they may not have a lot of information to go on anyway, which is surprising.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you would think they would have DNA evidence or something like that. Anything at all. But they just don't. So did you say none of her possessions were stolen? Or were
they? Not that they could. No, they didn't think it was a robbery gone wrong. It looked like, from the limited information that I saw, it looked like her things had been gone through, almost like somebody was looking for something or maybe trying to make it look like a robbery one way or another. But they felt like the way everything looked is somebody was looking for something specific. So I feel like there were specific areas that were disturbed that are not typically conducive to a robbery. That's why they felt, that's why they said that multiple times, that they believed it was somebody young, somebody who knew her, looking for something specific. And to say that means they weren't looking in her top drawer of her dresser looking for a jewelry box, or there was a jewelry box left that was there but not opened or rifled through. So, like, mm-hmm. there must have been evidence that had it been a robbery, it would have looked different. Or they went to very weird places, like maybe through her bookshelves for some reason, looking for something specific. But again, they don't specify exactly why they feel like the person who did this was looking for something specific or what they were looking for.
That's also interesting.
I've never heard that before. Thoughts outside of that? It bugs me that there's just no information for somebody who is so well known in such a nice community where this has never happened before or since.
I have two theories at this point. One, it was either somebody really young and, you know, like what I said previously, and the reason that nobody in her family is really speaking up is because it was over a decade ago at this point. They weren't big on social media because they were older and they had other things going on in their life. Those things, by drawing attention to what's happening, could affect what's happening in their lives. You know, callous, but...
And they may not have been close. I really don't know.
Yeah, they may not have been close. Or she had some information or something on somebody that, you know, on the surface may look innocent or maybe not. But if it got out, might not be great for that person, you know?
Or was even just suspected that she did.
Yeah, even suspected that she did. And so they went looking. And, you know, things happen. Now, the reason that nothing has come about that is if it is the second thing, that person would probably be a little bit more intelligent than a kid or a very young adult. And would cover their tracks. So, or you would assume. You would hope.
Wouldn't
or
have left
actually,
anything.
You don't hope. You hope the opposite. But, you know,
you
not naming any names or pointing any fingers anywhere else. But kind of sounds like that. Or, like I said, could be a very young person. And they don't want to poke the pig. I don't know. And tell it all Charlotte's secrets. Whatever.
Oh, I didn't know where you were going with that when you said poke the pig.
Charlotte's Web. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I got it when you said to the Charlotte part. That threw me, though. I can normally follow your train of thought, but that one was
a
little bit harder. That's okay.
Have you figured out my name yet?
No.
It's Big Al.
I figured it was Al. Isn't that for Alabama?
Yep. Big Al is the mascot for Alabama University, which is stomped Clemson's butthole. Many times. And anything from basketball for March Madness, woohoo, this year, to football, many, many years. So, suck it, Clemson.
And you covered somebody from Clemson, and I covered somebody from University of Alabama, oddly enough.
Mm-hmm. And my name was Big Al. So, ha ha. Anyways, good job. That's scary. Yeah, if you have any information, you know, call the places and do the things.
We'll have all the information in the case notes.
Yep.
As always.
This has been long enough. We love you. We mean it.
Okay, bye.
The